Welcome to For the Health of It, an intimate look at public health in Cowley County, Kansas. Join us as we discuss topics that are impacting public health in our community and learn about what we do at your local health department. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of For the Health of It, Cowley County. This is Tom Langer, the Health Department Administrator, and with me once again today is my most knowledgeable partner, Allie. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, you are going to be the main go-to person for today's episode, which we are calling Trail Mix. The reason it's called Trail Mix is because we've got a bunch of little things in it that we want people to hear and learn about. So,
right.
So that's what we're going to do, and just kind of give people a quick overview. We'll be looking at kind of a respiratory season update, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the prophylaxis that we provide for the respiratory season, and then we're going to spend some time talking about health in all policies. So yeah, grab your cups of coffee, your bottles of water, everybody kick back, because here we go, and we're going to go back to the respiratory season update, or what I have recently this week entitled for myself, Do Dumb Things, Win Dumb Prizes. You know, because and I'll get into that in just a minute, but we're going to take a look at all the things that go into this, including respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, colds, flu, COVID, allergy related issues, and other dumb things that we do. So what I want to know right now, Allie, is give us a little bit of an update. Where are we at as far as respiratory infections in our county?
Yeah, certainly. They're starting to present themselves.
Right. I know that, I think we just published a recent report, which provides a graph. And sometimes those graphs can be a little bit misleading because it will show that it's not a big thing yet, but we do know that it is happening. And we want to talk a little bit about going back to RSV and where that's starting to kick up as a problem in the country, and then how it will affect us here in Cowley County and about the time period. So let's talk a little bit about RSV. Where is it right now in the United States, and why are we concerned?
It is in the southern part of the United States. We're concerned because it's respiratory season, but we also know that people are very mobile. The holidays are approaching, so a lot more travel is just naturally going to occur. Those things spread relatively quickly anyway, so it'll just be a few weeks, I would say, anywhere from 4 to 6 before it's really prevalent here in Cowley County.
So why do people care about this? RSV, no big deal, I don't care, it doesn't bother me. Why should they be concerned?
Oh man, because it's just miserable to have it. Not being able to breathe well, to breathe clearly, is not great.
And I'm a healthy guy, I'm a healthy gal. Yeah, I have had colds before, big deal. Why do we care?
Those lower respiratory infections, they're really hard to fight. They last a long time, and they make your body very weak. So if you were to be exposed to another pathogen, it could be devastating, because your immune system's already essentially going to be knocked down on its butt. And then you're asking it to jump up and fight other pathogens, and it's not going to be able to.
So who does this bother the most?
It really impacts our older populations, and then, of course, our infants, our babies.
Why do we worry about the babies and the infants?
That group is special. They don't have the same type of immunity that any of us in this room have, or most of our listeners do, because they are so young. They haven't been exposed to as many things, either naturally or through injections or immunizations, and so their immune system is essentially learning each time it's exposed to something new.
And do babies have the capacity in their first year of life to really develop the antibodies necessary to combat RSV?
No.
So what do we do? How do we help them?
Well, there are a few ways that we could help them. The obvious ones would be, if you're sick, to stay away from our young babies if you can. Just don't do it. It's a smart idea to avoid giving that to them. But there is also a new injection that's available for that cohort, Beyfortus, and its data is great.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. I mean, I'm kind of teasing. I'm shaking up the bag, like when you get a bag of trail mix. I know, do you like trail mix? I do. I like the stuff that's got peanuts and M&M's. And
sure, I think we're on M&M's right now.
Are we on M&M's?
Yeah, we got to start with something strong.
So anyway, we're gonna mix that bag up a little bit. Colds, how can they differentiate between what's a cold and what's the influenza virus if they don't know?
I mean, the easiest way to go about that would be to be tested, be screened if you can do so.
Mm-hmm. And symptomatically, What do we see more with colds and less with the flu? Fever?
Right.
Runny nose?
Of course.
Sneezing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Looks a lot like an allergy thing because it seems to kind of just hang right there in the front of your face, you know, like this yucky thing.
And that's important. It is relatively local if it's a cold.
Yeah. And influenza brings with it something different, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
And talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about the symptoms of influenza.
Influenza is well known for, kind of like you were saying, the fever, but the body aches,
body
especially
aches,
in the last few years, those have been very prominent. Yeah, those things linger around, being just really weak and fatigued, sometimes dehydration, and things come with influenza.
The weariness, the heaviness in the chest, the congestion that will come.
Right, just overall not feeling
nasty,
well.
Nasty sore throats, things like that, which with a cold, you don't normally see that.
Right.
Okay. And one of the things we talked about during the pandemic is, man, if you're sneezing a lot,
it's
a different symptom. So making sure that you know what those things are. And then, of course, then there's our still good old buddy COVID.
Right.
He's still running around. He has not gone away. What's the current one called? I don't even remember now.
Yeah, they change very quickly.
Yep, it is. It continues to do it. But we do have some effective treatments for that too.
Certainly.
And we'll talk a little bit in a second. And then there's this last one. And this is where I have to beat on myself a little bit because of what happened? Allergies. Has it been dry around here or am I just imagining things?
Oh no, it's been very dry.
It has been ridiculous. And so I love this year because the trees are just so ugly as they drop. And the leaves have fallen in my yard, and of course I just am like one of those people who says, oh, I gotta get that cleaned up. And so I go out and I work on it, and I have this device that kind of like vacuums them up and it grinds them up and makes them into nice mulch. And in a normal year when there's some moisture in the leaves, it's really cool. I mean, it's a nice thing. And this year it kind of turned it into dirt.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm a real smart guy. I'm a learned man and a public health aficionado, and I know to take all those necessary precautions, and I went out and did that and didn't wear a mask.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and then that evening I was like spitting and puking and bringing up all this yuck, and then within 24 hours in that same area, I started coming down with this kind of stuff, you know. And I'll tell you what, it's been hanging on, and it's like I say, do stupid things. Win stupid prizes.
Yes, but so, that also means your immune system's
well,
working.
Well, it means it's working, but I'll tell you what, if I could have avoided this, I certainly would have. It's not fun walking around with a forehead full of guck, you know, because of the fact I put stuff in there and it was an irritant, you know, and I probably had allergens and everything else that was in there, and there we go, the body responds, and there you get it. But let's go back to talking a little bit more, you know, about that big P word, prophylaxis.
Yes.
You know, the things that we do to kind of keep these issues at bay. And we know that we've got certain things in-house that we've got ready for folks. We'll go back to the top of the list, RSV. We have two different types of treatments for RSV. Let's talk about what they are. Arexv.
Arexv is the updated vaccine by GlaxoSmithKline, and it is for individuals who are 60 and older.
Mm-hmm.
It is a vaccine that is designed to prevent the lower respiratory infection. So that means that you could still contract RSV, and you could definitely have the symptoms from it and feel a little miserable for a few days. But ideally, it's not going to travel from your upper respiratory system to your lower respiratory system where that really intense infection sets and you become susceptible to pneumonia and other things
right.
of that nature.
Exactly. And we've been providing that now. We brought that in, what did we have it, 1st of October?
Oh, yes.
And we've been offering it, and we've had a pretty good response to that with people coming in, especially in that age group.
Yes, we have. And several people have actually been getting it along with their other seasonal vaccines, so it's been nice.
Have we talked to anybody that's taken it and how they've responded or how they reacted to the shot itself?
Yes, we've given several doses, and overall we're hearing that it makes them kind of tired. for about 48 hours, but overall it's not too bad. You know, a little bit of some soreness at the injection site and just feeling a little achy in the upstairs region, but overall it's not bad. It's definitely nothing compared to what it would be if they were to contract RSV.
Right. And we're worried about this, again, because we don't want to have that lower respiratory tract infection, especially in our seniors. Those things put them in the hospital. The shot is pretty well covered by most insurances.
Yes.
We were, it's brand new this year, so we had those kind of concerns. We were worried about that. But that issue is pretty much worked out. And remember, too, is this a shot they have to get every year?
No, it is not. This one's great. They're saying it's a one-time
thing.
It's
a one and done.
That's awesome. Yeah,
so, you know, it'd be something to think about. I certainly would recommend it and encourage anybody, you know, over age 60, especially if you are prone to respiratory illness already.
Right.
Or if you have any kind of a pre-existing condition, give us a call. We have it on hand. We can get you set up and get that. And that's a good thing. And then on the kiddos side, the newborns, that's where Beyfortus comes in. And there's a difference between Arexvy and Beyfortus. Arexvy is a vaccine. Beyfortus is not. It is a
injection.
It's an injection with a monoclonal antibody. It's actually providing the antibodies that fight RSV to the child because their system cannot create them. It's giving them that shot, and within 24 hours, they have immunity.
Right.
That's amazing. And it will last through the season, and it will then allow their body, as they grow in age, to spin it up and be able to have a better immune response in future years.
Yes.
Okay. So, and that's really important. Why? What's the leading cause of hospitalization in newborns?
It's RSV.
RSV. So, moms, dads, if you have little ones, you know, and they're less than a year old, you know, and this is their first cold and flu season that they're going to be heading into, you really should take a look at this. This shot is not cheap. It is not. We've had a little bit of resistance from some of the insuring companies that say, oh, well, gee, it's not a vaccine, so we're not going to pay for it. And I'm like, oh, come on, guys. You're just saying this because you didn't jack up rates enough early in the year to know it was coming so that you could, you know, you would pay for it. But I think what do we get? It's right around the $500 mark.
Yep.
And the thing I look at is, wow, if I'm insured, my insurance company doesn't provide it, is it, you know, and I get this, what am I doing? If I have insurance, well, I'm going to be meeting deductible. I'm going to be already paying that. But that $500, if that keeps my baby out of the hospital, it's well worth the money. And well, I don't have $500, Tom. I can't do it right up front. You know what? You don't need to. You can come in and we'll work it out with you. You know, you want to put on a credit card and pay it over time? Fine, we can do that. You want to pay us interest-free over a few months? We'll do that. If you want this for your kid, you come see us. We'll make sure that any baby in Cowley County that needs it will get it.
Yes.
And that, I think, is what people need to understand. To me, it's not about the money. It's about saving people money in the long run and protecting your family, especially if you have other children in the house. If I have a newborn at home and I have other little ones that are going to school, they're school age, and they're coming home, or they're coming home from daycare, they are petri dishes bringing me every little thing that's going to come. And then they're going to come run right in, and they're going to stick their face right in the front of their little brother or little sister, and they're googling, and they're playing, and they're screaming, and everybody gets worked up. And I know it goes, it's like here, past the biscuits, you know, from one to the next, all the way through the family. So do yourselves a favor, think long and hard about it. We have all the information. This is good stuff. We would not be even putting it out there if we thought it was going to do any kind of harm. And it's one of those things, I think, on the respiratory infection side of things that is really worth considering and worth the investment. Influenza vaccine.
Yeah.
We still have that.
Oh, we sure do.
Yep. And we still see people coming in that are getting their flu shots. But I'll tell you what. If you wait until it has arrived here and it's really going full steam, you've waited too long.
Yeah, just don't do it, guys.
Yeah, you'll wait too long. If it starts circulating in the county and you haven't had your shot, your body won't spin up quick enough to fight it.
Right. And one thing that I don't think people understand. So if I'm in my house and somebody in my house comes down with influenza and I say, oh, shoot, I better go get my shot.
Ugh. It's too late.
It's too late, but for sure. But if you've already had that exposure and your body is
Yeah.
It's just not good.
You know, the idea is you get it early because it takes approximately 2 weeks for the human body to go ahead and actually build up the antibodies in our system at the rate that we would need to fight it off quickly.
Yes.
That's the issue. Again, none of these vaccines, and you know, a flu vaccine, I had it once and I got the worst case of flu.
That's unfortunate.
It is, but it's not indicative of the shot.
No, definitely not.
You know, and when you understand the different variations of influenza and coronavirus that are out there, and I'm not talking about COVID, I'm talking about coronaviruses that are colds, because remember, those are coronaviruses too. They mutate and they move quick. They're hard. That's why you always heard, there's no cure for the common cold. No, but you do have the opportunity to, you know, tell when your body's coming down with it, understanding when you're going to be infectious, staying home at the right time, you know, getting your over-the-counter medications, you know, eating right. You know, I am a person that, believe it or not, I take supplemental vitamins and such, especially this time of the year. You know, things that have zinc and vitamin C and all of those things. It helps my body and my immune system get a little stronger.
Right.
You know, and so that's what we're about. I don't want to be ill. I despise being ill, and so I'll do everything that I can to not get ill. And I hope people can understand that, and we promote that quite a little bit. Anything else that we need to know out there? Let's talk about our BFC program just real quick.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, because we're going to backtrack just a bit, and I'm going to belay that. We're going to talk about COVID vaccine.
Okay.
Because I really think there's some stuff there that people need to know, some things we've heard now. We have two different types of COVID vaccines, right?
Yes.
What are they?
We have the Moderna vaccine mm-hmm. and the Novavax.
Right, Novavax and Moderna. Two different companies, right?
Yes.
Tell me about Moderna. This was the one that we at the health department probably gave 95% of the time during the initial pandemic and all the way through, right?
Yes.
And it is what? An RNA based?
Yes. Yes. So it's messenger RNA based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now, lo and behold, we've got a company that's an American based company. Right here in the United States. I think they're in North Carolina is where all of this is made. And they are Novavax.
Yes.
And they have a COVID vaccine that has the same protections, okay, against the current circulating strain.
Yes.
And they are not RNA-based.
Correct.
They are protein-based.
Yep. Very, very similar to the influenza vaccines.
Just like the flu shot. Yep, exactly. And so people have an option. And one of the things we noticed was its efficacy, and kind of made my eyes, you know, perk up a little bit when I saw those numbers.
Right.
They're showing really high efficacy rates, and efficacy is its ability to do the job they say it will do.
Yes.
And how successful it is at reducing the infections, right?
Yep.
So, do you remember the numbers? I know they were, the first one was a 9. I think in its initial sequence, it was like in the 90% range of effectiveness, and then they actually went higher than that. And I know we've got a form in the health department that provides all that information. If people want to come in and they want to talk, they're not sure or they're a little skeptical. The idea is we wanted to make sure people have choice.
Of
you
know, course.
You have the option. We want you to have it. We don't want you to be fearful. And again, this all goes back to all of your other pre-existing conditions. The people that have been coming in to get these vaccines, they have not been afraid of any of them, have they? I mean, or they just wouldn't be here.
Right. So, yep, they're here.
And you know, we still have a lot of folks in the county, and everybody needs to respect that do want these. They want the COVID vaccine. They want the flu vaccines. They want the RSV vaccines. And it is our responsibility to make sure we have them available. And that's what we do. And not just have them available, to be able to have a good, intelligent conversation with people and let them know, this is what it is. This is what, you know, you can expect. And not sell pie in the sky, but to be honest and upfront and provide these protections, because it's what we do.
Yeah, give us a call. We'll answer any of your questions.
Absolutely. Anything else that we want to talk about in that section? Because we're about to shift gears a little bit.
Nope, I think that's okay.
Okay, so we've eaten all the M&Ms out of the trail mix.
Right.
What's left in that bag?
Well, we had talked about the VFC program.
Right. Oh, we were going to talk about that, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we didn't touch upon it. VFC and the Bridge program.
Yes.
Okay. These are the gummy bears.
Uh-huh.
That are in the trail mix. So tell me about VFC.
VFC stands for Vaccines for Children. This is a federal program that we do have within our health department. Essentially, it makes vaccines for children and adolescents very affordable for families who do not have insurance or their insurance does not cover those vaccines. So here at the health department, you are looking at $20.25 per vaccine. That is extremely affordable when you consider that some of these vaccines are over $250 by themselves.
And this program is for children age 0 to...
just under 19 years.
18 years, 364 days.
Yes.
Yep, absolutely. So if you are not 19, if you're under 19, you are looked at in this program as being a child, a ped, or an adolescent, and the program covers you.
And they automatically qualify. There's no paperwork or anything crazy they have to do. Just come in and we'll get you taken care of.
Exactly. If you know, your insurance isn't there, it'll take it. I mean, sometimes that's there and you know, that 2025, that's an odd number, but that's what it costs us to actually administer the program.
Right.
You know, we have nurses' time and, you know, all of the things that we do. That's where that 2025 comes from. So, and that also, I think, is a bit, I don't say regulated, but it's kind of the guidance as well from the state health department and from the feds.
And again, just come talk to us. We'll work with you if we need to.
Now, on the one issue or the one vaccine that we were looking at, though, that we were curious about because it went all private now. I mean, I think this is something people need to remember. All of the coronavirus, you know, COVID-19 vaccines are now all private.
Yep.
The companies are still making them, but the government is not buying them anymore. And in the original pandemic, they bought that stuff. They provided it to the states. The states provided it to us. We distributed it. Now it's being treated like any other vaccine, where we've got to go out and order it. We've got to bring it in. We've got to pay for it. And then we've got to, you know, we deliver it to the individuals that want it. That was a big shift from anybody just walking and get it. Here, you don't have to worry about it. Just fill out this paper that you want it and you got it. Now people actually have to go through that, and we don't want that barrier to exist where people who have no insurance or can't afford it can't receive it if they want it. And that is where the Bridge program comes in. So talk a little bit about that.
The Bridge program is very similar to the VFC program that we just spoke to, but it's for a different cohort. It's for those who are 19 and older, that adult cohort. And it is, at this time, specific to the COVID-19 vaccines.
Right. And right now, there's only one that's covered there.
Right. And that is Moderna.
And that is Moderna. So basically, if you wanted it and you didn't have insurance or you didn't have the capacity to pay and you want to get the vaccine, you can still get it, and it will not cost you more than $20.25.
Correct.
It's just simply, you know, come in and ask for it, and pretty simple process.
Oh, yes.
Again, it removes the barrier to people being vaccinated.
Right, and it doesn't put any kind of flag on you either in the waiting room or anything like that.
No, nobody knows.
It's just the same as anybody else coming in to get a shot.
Absolutely. So now we've gotten all of that good stuff out of the way. I've dug through the bag. We know that all of our M&Ms, gummy bears are gone. What's left in this bag?
I need something kind of salty, like a peanut or
salty.
A pretzel.
There you go. Pretzels and cashews, whatever you like. And that's where we're going next. And that's going to be a topic that's kind of new to folks around here, but it's referred to as health in all policies. And just by examining the names, health in all policies, well, what the heck is he talking about now? In your own words, Allie, explain to me, why is it important for anybody to consider health when they are looking at setting policy or embarking on a major project that will impact people in their life?
Well, it's important because the policies that they set forth are going to influence the way that people act in all sorts of fashions. So it's important to consider those health components while you're drafting and in the implementation phases so that you can potentially avoid some of those consequences later on down the road that might be costly or devastating because of poor health.
I'm going to ask you a question that may or may not be age appropriate for you, but do you remember the banning of pesticides by the EPA and all of the we'll talk about a big one, okay, that occurred in my lifetime, and it's DDT. We'll talk about DDT. DDT is a exceptional pesticide. It's one of those ones that it'll pretty much kill everything. And when we were, as a nation, combating vector-borne diseases, especially those that were mosquito-driven, they used to have in cities, I remember this in Topeka, they had trucks that would come around, and they had atomizers on them. And you know what an atomizer is? It's like a big fan that you would shoot a spray into, and that fan would make that mist so fine, and it would shoot it up 40, 50 feet in the air. And they would come through our neighborhoods, and they would spray the trees that overhung the streets. So if you live in Winfield or you live in Ark City, and you think about some of the city streets that we have, where we have these big old tree canopies that hang over 10th Street, 9th Street, and, you know, 8th Street in Winfield. I think about them from downtown going west. That was it. And there would be these trucks that would come by, and they would basically be shooting this DDT up into the air. Now, guess what? All the little kids, including yours truly, we would be playing, you know, in our yards and in our streets and riding our bikes and all that kind of good stuff. And by golly, we didn't, I don't know that it helped our health, that we were killing off the insects to keep us well, but what was the after effect of the cure? And then, of course, all of the things that came in, and there was a book that was written following the use of that for a decade, and that was called Silent Spring, and it took a look at the effects of all of the chemical use on pests and what have you, and how it affected us. And then we still see it today. I challenge you, if you watch much TV, have you ever seen these commercials on TV about, you know, asking people if they have mesothelioma? You know what mesothelioma is? It is it is cancer that's brought on by asbestos. Okay, so people that work in fields that have, you know, exposure to asbestos in their lifetime, if they develop lung cancer, it's incurable. It's really nasty, and so mesothelioma was a after effect of the use of asbestos. Here's the thing. Asbestos isn't a bad thing, and asbestos is still used. We have to use asbestos in a lot of things. I think it's still probably part of, you know, automobile brakes, because they generate so much heat, they have to be able to dissipate it. It works. We have firefighters that wear asbestos-lined suits and such because they do not burn. You know, asbestos is an amazing element. But what we didn't do is we didn't put into place the safeguards to protect our health when we use those things. And that's where things like health and all policies come in. The big one that I could absolutely point to still is lead poisoning, especially environmental lead poisoning in kids, and how we used lead-based paint for centuries, knowing all the while the harmful effects that lead have on children, you know, and on humans. Still put it out there because there was a point in time where it was just such a wonderful thing, and it provided us so much good that we could see. We never considered the things we did not see, and that's where it goes. So now we have things that occur in our communities. There was a 2023 event that I think, was it in February that the first data walk was held?
No, it was actually last year.
Was it last year?
Right around the holidays.
Right, it was about a year ago, wasn't it? Right around Thanksgiving that we had the first data walk. Now, talk about a data walk and tell people what that is.
Yeah, so the data walk was essentially taking locally available data that is based on different indicators for the residents who live here, and it was compiling those things in a way that you could tell a story about what is going on here. So the data walk was essentially a walk of viewing the data and interpreting that data to understand more of what is going on here.
In both of our communities, our big communities, one of the major concerns they have is safe and affordable housing, right?
Yep.
I think that a lot of people, if they know our county, they know our communities, they would probably agree there is not enough housing for young families that is affordable, that is safe and new, and so forth. And so we have a lot of issues that are absolutely connected to housing. And we were at the first data walk, and at the end of it, a wonderful presentation. People came from outside of our area to actually present the information. It was our information. It was our data. It is about us. And, it was a lot of things that we knew, and I was like, oh, boy, this is not going to be good. We know we have things that are not so good health-wise in our communities. People are going to be upset. But I was surprised that most people were actually more concerned and basically asked the right question on how do we reverse this trend or how do we make this stop. And that is where we say, well, it goes back to how we create policies and what we do and what we find acceptable. Anybody that's ever gone to build something, a large building in a commercial area, or like we'll talk about like Encinita down in Arc City, where they're looking at putting that stuff in before they can go and build on property that maybe, in an area, they're going to have to do a whole lot of homework. They've got to do a lot of studying and say, well, what's going to happen here? What will happen to the ground and to the groundwater and all of that? That's an environmental impact study. And they have a lot of things that are looked at, and people that are really concerned about the environment, just the physical environment, weigh in on those. And that's pretty much commonplace nowadays, that if you're building something, you've got to do that environmental portion of it. But what was missing was the health component, because we all live in our environments, and we all interact in those environments, and those environments have a direct impact on how healthy we are or how ill we can become. And that is where the health in all policies portion comes in. So what we're saying is when we have things that are about to occur, new housing developments, new policies about something, large scale business additions, making sure that we slow down just a little bit in the planning process, in that initial planning process, to not just look at only the environmental or only the economic data, but to also then look at, say, what effect on human health is this going to have in the near future and in the long term? Because it's the only way to ensure that we've at least considered those things. There was a couple of really interesting examples of that, I think, that we looked at in issues lately. And I'm going to throw out splash pads.
Okay.
Because I know you love splash pads. Don't you?
I do not.
Aren't they fun? No, they are. I mean, come on. When you think about a splash pad, what image does that conjure up in your mind? I see little kids, running around the park, screaming, yelling, dancing around in the water as it, squirts out of the little nozzles and everything up in the air. And then, it's a great way for them to be out, to get some exercise, to cool down in the heat of the summer. And all of that good stuff, right?
Yes.
Perfect. I mean, what is not to love about a splash pad?
There are a few things.
There are, aren't there?
Yes.
And where do those things hide?
In the water that's used in the splash pad.
Right. And when we look at that, and if you're looking at a splash pad, and you say, hey, we have an idea that we want to fix up this park, and we want to include a new splash pad. That's cool. Everybody says, oh, yeah, that'd be great. That'd be so much fun. But there are some considerations we want to take into it, right?
Yes.
And that's where health and all policies comes in. Now, that is what it's called. I mean, that's a process.
Yes.
Or what we try to do. But then there's actually something that is done underneath that is actually the health impact assessment. Those are the two things. And if somebody were to say, hey, we'd like to know, what are the health impacts from something? A health impact assessment can be done. And Allie, I'm going to put in a splash pad.
Okay.
Isn't that great? I want you to tell me, what are the pros and the cons of doing that? And you could tell me.
Yes.
What are the bad things about a splash pad?
The bad things about a splash pad are that water is a carrier for disease sometimes. So we're talking about kiddos for the most part that will be using these splash pads. And we know that kiddos don't usually have the best hygiene practices.
Well, yeah. But, you know, come on, it's water. They're getting washed off, you know?
Oh, yeah, come that's on. Great as long as they don't ingest any of the water or put their hands in their mouth after playing in the water. Or...
Well, so you are just in the poo-poo, everybody's good time, you know? Tell me, really, come on, is it that bad? I mean, why would public health even be concerned about any kind of waterborne illness?
Well, with waterborne illnesses, they make people very sick. A lot of times they result in hospitalizations because of dehydration and those impacts. But ultimately, public health has a responsibility with waterborne illnesses because some of them, including shigellosis, are still reportable conditions, and they require us to go out and do investigations to find out the origins and how it's been transmitted and maybe where it started, and then also to implement corrective actions to make that stop.
Okay, so are you telling me that, you know, you're going to be a killjoy and you're going to take away my fun time, that if I want a splash pad, I can't have it because of this?
No, there are certainly things that you could do that would minimize those potential impacts, but there are definitely things that need to be considered when you're talking about putting in a splash pad.
And planning that, and those things that you think about that maybe you didn't think about before, right? And that is where the health impact assessment fits. And that is where health and all policies comes into play. And when you would ask somebody or like the health department to maybe help in performing this task, well, they're just going to tell me no, aren't they?
No, certainly not. The idea of a health impact assessment is that it's going to produce realistic recommendations and suggestions. So if we're talking about the splash pad, we might propose a few things. Number one, we would draw attention to the fact that, yeah, you're going to put in a splash pad. That's great. I'm glad that kiddos are going to have a nice, safe place to play. It's not going to be a pool. The potential for drowning won't be there. Great. They're great for heat. Awesome. So let's try to maximize those things and maybe consider a playground. If a playground isn't feasible, then let's see what's going on with that splash pad and at least make sure that the splash pad that we're putting in is a system that's going to, again, minimize those impacts. So how is the water going to flow? Is it going to be recirculated through? Is it going to be the same water that's going through again and again and again, despite anything that's in it? Is it going to be disinfected? Is it going to be new water each time? That type of thing.
Right. And then again, when they get that, what's the tone of a health impact assessment?
The tone is supposed to be very neutral. So we would be, with each condition, looking at what is good and what could potentially be harmful about it.
Right. And one of the things that the health department's role is to absolutely be that neutral voice. The we do have a real concern about being protective of public health.
Certainly.
I mean, and that will never go away. But we do not have the big egos that say, we are going to create your policy.
Definitely not. That is up to the decision makers. We just want to inform that decision.
We just want to make sure that they have all of the information available during the onset of planning and, you know, consider all of those things. Because when you do that at that point in the project, then you are setting yourself for much better success long term. Otherwise, you can have something that goes in, and there was a water park up in Sedgwick County, was it a summer or so ago?
Yes, in
21. Tanganyika, right? Had the issue, and they had to close it down. And public health came in. I mean, Sedgwick County Health Department had to come in. They had to close it down.
Yep.
Now, you certainly don't want something like that, but that's the way those things work. And then they had to go in and figure it out, and then then you had to go back and redesign it and re-engineer it and all of that stuff, when it's so much easier to do it right the first time. So basically, it's like, you know those instructions that come with a piece of IKEA furniture, you know, that I would look at and say, I don't need this. It's just easy. Let's put it together. It's Legos. And then all of a sudden I have four pieces left and it doesn't sit straight. I have to go back and read the instructions. It's making sure that we look at all the instructions and everything, and we consider it all up front before we take the steps to go ahead and create something that in the long run is going to be more of a burden or more of a nuisance or be more harmful to health than if we had done it right the first time. Just like I say, you know, I know that there's a lot of things that we can use. Going back to the guy that was grinding up leaves and didn't wear a silly mask. If he would have protected himself, he could have avoided illness. So when, as he writes his own personal protection plan, he's going to say, duh, do you remember? Don't do that again. And hopefully he will remember, because, you know, he's kind of hard-headed and stubborn sometimes. But anyway, that's it. So that's kind of in a nutshell, common talk about HIAP, you know, health and all policies, and doing the HIAs, and people will be able to see more and more of that coming through from the health department, right?
Yes.
Why are we doing this?
Because we want to protect health. It's our job.
And not only that, and what else do we have access to that most people don't?
The data, all kinds of data.
And there, this is really a scholarly type of a research project when we do these things.
Certainly. These are not things that we are pulling from opinion or things that we believe.
Yeah, this is, yeah. Well, we may believe them, but...
They're not just perceptions. They're not backed by evidence.
They're not perceptions. That's it. This stuff has evidence behind it. So we talk about it's evidence-based. This is research. When we look at it, we look at other studies, we look at other situations where things have been done, and we want to learn from those. We don't want to go in and make them repeat mistakes that others have in the way they set things up, right? So that's it. Wow, this bag now is pretty much empty, isn't it?
Yep.
I think we kind of flew through that. I don't know. It seemed to go by pretty quick for me. I don't know about you, but I'm looking over here at our producer, and he's like, yeah, holding up the 45-minute sign. He says, enough, man. So we're going to go ahead and pull this edition of For the Health of It County, Cali to an end. Allie, is there anything else that you want to add before we sign off?
Not that I can think of today.
Hey, holidays are coming up.
Yes.
I hope everybody is safe and enjoys their holidays if they're traveling, to do so safely. You know, don't overeat, like I know I will, and have a great time, and then come back and visit us again next time. And until then,
stay well.
Stay well, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of For the Health of It, Cali County. We hope you found it useful and that you'll tell your friends and give us a listen again during future episodes. As always, we end today's segment by replaying a recent Public Health Minute, which is a weekly radio message focused on keeping you healthy. So, until next time, stay well, everyone. It's the Yuletide season, and it's time for gathering around the fireplace, giving gifts, and, of course, the Christmas tree. Christmas trees are a big part of celebrations, but they can also be an extreme fire hazard. So here's some tips from your local health department to help you stay safe as you celebrate the season. First, keep your tree hydrated. Dry Christmas trees can catch fire in seconds, so be sure to water your tree daily. Next, place your tree in a good spot. Don't block any exits and keep it away from fire or heat sources, including fireplaces, candles, or radiators. Third, when you break out the Christmas lights, examine them closely. Frayed or damaged cords and broken or burnt out bulbs can pose a fire risk, so don't hesitate to toss those out. Lastly, don't forget to turn off your Christmas lights when you go to bed or leave the house. Wishing you a very safe and Merry Christmas is just another way the health department works hard every day to help you stay well.